Hey, it's Cole Swindell, and when I spend 200 days a year rolling down the highway, the bus can start to feel smaller than a guitar case. Everyone wonders how I stay chill while the hours crawl by. Truth is, one good luck spent on Chumba, and suddenly the trip feels a whole lot shorter. Finding your space, even when there isn't much to spare. Need some chill? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus TNCs apply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside the great and powerful Joe Rexrode here on Morning Drive. And we're going to bring in one of Joe Rexrode's good buddies. Our friend Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports joins us now on Morning Drive. And Charles, I know you're very familiar with my guy next to me, Joe Rexrode. Welcome to our show. Thanks for coming on with us.
I am confused by the great and powerful reference. I feel like this is the wrong show. Like I must be on someone else's show. I've known this guy for 23 years, and Those are not two words I would have used.
Just remember, Charles, what happened in college stays in college, buddy. We're strictly talking NFL here.
How about the sleepy and hungover?
Those may be more appropriate.
That's probably about right. Especially 23 years ago.
Well, Charles, thanks so much for coming on with us. Obviously, around here in our market, the Tom Brady potential interest in the Titans rumors are swirling about. They won't go away. What have you made of this situation between Brady and the Patriots, and how likely do you think it is that he ends up here in Nashville?
Well, there's a couple of things here. I mean, with the Patriots, I think people have to understand that the way that Bill Belichick is operating with Tom Brady right now, it's not a break from the norm. Like this idea that he's sort of, I've heard the phrase, business as usual. In 2017, Dante Hightower was set to hit free agency. There was this idea, he had a number he wanted from the Patriots. They said, look, here's what we think you're worth. If you really feel like you're going to exceed that, test free agency, figure it out, come back to us. That's what he did. He went, tested free agency, didn't get the numbers he thought, didn't see the situation he liked, and ended up coming back to the Patriots and signing a four-year deal. Now, that's not Tom Brady, but, Hightower is an extremely valuable player for them defensively. And I think Tom Brady, being at the age that he's at now, I truly honestly feel like Bill Belichick's like, look, we have our number, and he also knows that he's operating from a position of strength that most destinations that Tom Brady could even consider, those franchises would have to retool their offenses, not to fit necessarily a scheme that could host him, but just straight up to fit Tom, because Tom runs his own offense in New England. We talk about Josh McDaniels and all these different aspects, but the reality is Tom Brady shaped that offense. So wherever he goes, Tom Brady will essentially shape your offense. And most teams just don't have the ability to host that, and I think that's part of why the Titans are – I would say, if it's not New England, I think most people consider Tennessee to be the front runner beyond New England, and that's because there's that level of familiarity from, personnel aspects, the head coach aspects, sort of the culture, all these different things. If there's somebody who can take on Tom and shape something fairly quickly, it would be an organization like that.
Of course, they'd have to retool things pretty dramatically too, Charles. I mean, obviously Ryan Tannehill, I didn't realize he was as good of an athlete as he is, watching him up close. So let's just get to this. We debate this all day, every day. If you were the Titans and it was as simple as a door A and door B right now, Charles, which one would you pick?
I'm not a big believer in, and I'll tell you what, I'll apply my San Francisco model. This whole idea of the 49ers came up, and my issue with the 49ers is going to be the same as my issue with the Titans. Tom Brady is a two-year window, right? Straight up. He's a two-year window. I think he's somebody who wants to go and play for 2 years. There's no guarantee those will be two high-quality years, okay? Maybe it's one high-quality year from him. Why are you going to change if you feel like you have a plan in place and you sort of have the foundation built that you need to have built, why would you alter that all of a sudden? And typically, if you do have a foundation there, you know, you're projecting 2, 3, 4 years out. The 49ers are sitting there projecting 5 years out. Why are you going to sell that short all of a sudden for a one-year window or a two-year window? I just don't know. Now, if we're talking about 35-year-old Tom Brady, if we're talking about, remember when Peyton Manning moved on from the Colts to the Broncos, now granted he was, you know, arguably damaged goods because he had to figure out whether or not the nerve damage would be an issue. He was still in his mid-30s. Not the same issue with Tom. There is not going to be an extended window. You're looking at 2 years. Why, if you're the Titans, would you tear that up? I think if you feel like you have a 2, 3, 4 year window in place that you've planned for, I don't know why you would tear it up now for that.
Well, first of all, it's refreshing to hear that from a known Tana hater such as yourself. But
well, not a Tana hater, but okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I've seen your tweets. No, but
I'm skeptical. Listen, yeah. I get it. Since we're going to go there, I was the guy who in you know, when he was with Miami, I said, look, he's going to turn the corner. This season, you know, and there were a few years like that where I kept hearing, like, this is it. This is when he stays healthy. This is when all the athleticism comes through. This is when Adam Gase turns the key, all these different things. And, you know, after a few years, you just kind of like, you can't keep going back to that. Well, somebody's got to stay healthy. Someone's got to produce. Someone's got to. So, you know, I generally, when I see a guy have a season like Ryan Tannehill had, I am a little slower to jump on the bandwagon because I want to see it in year two. And then if he gets past year two and into year three, then okay, then you're like, all right, he had his second life. We've seen other quarterbacks do that. I'm just reticent to say that we know for sure that the Ryan Tannehill we saw last year is going to be improved upon.
Well, look, I think Tannehill is a clear choice in part because of some of the stuff you said, Charles, but I will argue on your point of, you know, why are you thinking 1 or 2 years? I mean, isn't that kind of what this league is? I mean, if you think you are that close, and if you're the Titans, you just did get to the AFC Championship game, don't you kind of have to still look at it like, what are we going to do right now? What are we going to do with these next 2 years?
Not, I don't think when the merchandise that you're taking in, you don't know really what shape it's in. And I say that with Tom because, look, the reality is he's 43. I know we would love to believe that 43-year-old Tom Brady next season is going to be like 37-year-old, like 32-year-old. It's just not. It's not. And you also have to understand that part of Tom's functionality in New England is that he knows an offense better than anybody. I mean, how he can impact it, how he can shape it in the offseason, the fact that he can call plays from a playbook 10 years ago, you know, I'll share a story real quick about Peyton Manning, and this is absolutely the category Brady's in. I remember Reggie Wayne telling me one time they were playing the Buffalo Bills. It was, you know, they're in the red zone at some point. Peyton Manning sees a look offensively or defensively that he recognizes from, it was like 4 years before, but it hadn't been in the playbook. He looks at Reggie Wayne. He signals a play that almost all these other guys on offense don't fully understand, but Reggie Wayne remembers. This is a play from 4 years ago when we faced Buffalo in a red zone situation. They throw a touchdown pass, okay? And Reggie Wayne, I remember him telling me, this is what you get, having this institutional knowledge, being with this guy, having him shape it all over these years. It allows him to be a better player. It allows me to be a better player. You lose some of that now in the transition with Tom because he's going in with guys who don't have that institutional knowledge. They're going to be, you know, the situation he has with his running backs. It's the situation he has with Julian Edelman. That doesn't exist. And you have to understand that's going to have an impact on Tom the same way playing with young players this year had an impact on Tom. Guys he didn't trust, guys he didn't fully know, guys he couldn't just change, you know, signals of the line of scrimmage, and they fully understood exactly what was about to happen. How do you speed that curve and gain that in a few months if you push all in on Tom Brady?
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports on the line with us. And Charles, we've talked about what the future may look like for Marcus Mariota, as obviously he's going to move on from the Tennessee Titans and end up somewhere else. And one location that Joe and I have kind of zeroed in on is Chicago because of the uncertain future of Mitch Trubisky. How confident are you in Marcus Mariota and then maybe doing similar to what Ryan Tannehill did last year, showing up maybe as a backup with a chance to start eventually and taking that opportunity and running with it?
Well, I think it's a similar situation where, you know, can he stay healthy? You know, number one, I think it's a lot of it's going to be about health. That's the opportunity, obviously, that he's looking for. He's looking for somewhere where he can go in, be a backup, but have a starting opportunity, have a chance to compete, know that a staff that's bringing him in is going to be geared about winning, and that typically causes, if there's any weakness in a starting quarterback and there's strength in a backup and you're about winning and you know you can be fired, a staff will make that change, you know. And I think Matt Nagy, I think, you know, Ryan Pace, the front office in Chicago, they are absolutely looking at this as, look, this is a season we got to win. We go 6-10 this year. We're probably cleaned out top to bottom, and Mitch Trubisky's, you know, future in Chicago changes and in the NFL changes. And, you know, so I think if you're Marcus Mariota, that's what you look at. You want the situation where if you go in, you compete, and you're the better player, and they think you can win with you, you know, you're going to get that opportunity. I think Chicago is definitely right near the top of that list of places. Plus the offense, I think, is a fit to him. The one thing I worry about is Bears' offensive line is bad. This is bad. Now, we'll see what they do in free agency. You know, we'll see what they do in the draft. But, you know, quarterbacks get hit there, and they have to, you know, go off script and run and do all these different things. And that's when Trubisky was at his best, largely because it was hard to protect in Chicago. Imagine now putting Marcus Mariota in that situation where he's going to get hit, where it's going to be hard to protect. Maybe not the greatest, you know, set of circumstances, but if he's looking for opportunity and a staff that needs to win and could push in on him, that's going to be Chicago.
Charles Robinson, Yahoo Sports, proud Michigan State alum, and the CBA is coming back up here, Charles. Looks like, what, a voting window of a week
for
the players. What do you think of this CBA proposal? What do you think is going to happen?
Well, it's funny. I don't know if this has been reported. It's been texted to me by guys who have gotten the email with the CBA attached to it. So every 2,000 guys now have the full CBA, the full run of it. I don't know if it's out there on Twitter yet. But interestingly enough, when they sent the email out, the voting window was, 7 days? It was March 12th, 2010.
Nice. That's hard to do.
I was like, not a great start. Really, I was like, maybe you guys are going to travel back in time to ratify this thing. So not the
greatest
good sign ever in terms of, but that, you know, that obviously we're looking at a week out. The reason why they expanded it a week is because initially it was going to be a 2-day window. They decided, let's go 7 days, because what if we only get 400 or 500 guys who vote in a 2-day window? We can't ratify a 10-year CBA based on, you know, 400 or 500 guys. So they want to give it the full week, let people pick at it. I'll just say this about the deal. It's not perfect. It's not at all. And a lot of the player complaints, I do understand them. There are a lot of, you know, there's some restrictive things. Holdouts will be deathly now. I mean, you all the fines that get incurred now during holdouts and training camp, essentially this deal says you can't wipe those off the books anymore. Those are real. So if you lose $500,000 holding out, you've lost $500,000. You're not going to get that back. The team's not going to. You know, it'd be basically considered a salary cap infraction if you decided to make that up later, in a creative way. Anyway, beyond that, it's the upper echelon guys are upset because it's not as great for upper echelon guys as it is for middle of the road guys and lower rung guys. But I think as a broad based deal, it's probably better for the overall membership than if it was one sided. You want some more, you know, your 48% split in terms of the revenue that you get. They want it to be 50%. It may get to 48.5 if the TV deals are good enough, if the media kicker kicks in. I get all that, but, you know, it's, like I said, it's not a perfect deal. I feel like most players up until this point, now let's see if this changes over the course of the week, feel like it's worth voting for. I think it's going to be a slim margin if it passes, but a lot of it's going to depend on how hard does this get attacked for the next 7 days, which is part of why it's taken so long to get this to a vote. They had to go over every comma, every semicolon, because they know everybody's going to come out of the woodwork, from players to lawyers to media, just ripping this thing apart over the next week.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports has been our guest here on Morning Drive. Charles, thanks so much for taking time to come on with us, man. We appreciate it.
Absolutely, guys. It's always my pleasure. Call me anytime.
Thanks, buddy.
When we come back, we're going to get into a little bit of discussion and hit on some points Charles talked about there with Tom Brady. Regardless of how much you love or hate the Titans talk with Tom Brady, you got to love that they're getting some national attention, right? I mean, people around here have been clamoring for the Titans to get national attention. We'll talk about that coming up next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Fellow Hendersonville High School alum Taylor Swift bringing us back in.
Yeah, I mean, I went to college with Charles Robinson, but I went to high school with Taylor Swift, man.
That's right.
I don't want to hear any. Taylor Swift's got. Does she have some Robbie Stanley stories from back in the day?
Actually, yeah, she does.
Really?
She does. I don't know if I could tell those on the air right now either.
Wow. I'm intrigued.
Well, fun fact, she actually. Remember when she did the. Like, she went to prom? Like, this was back when she, like, first got popular. She went to prom in Alabama. That was one of our high schools that was in that area in Tuscaloosa. Yeah.
Okay.
Hillcrest High School.
I used to play football with her brother. We played at Ellis Middle School together. She'd be around at practice all the time. We had some sleepovers at their house before she was famous. I remember we were actually going on a field trip, like my eighth grade year. For some reason, we were going to Six Flags in Kentucky, which, great field trip.
Yeah.
Her brother sat down next to me on the bus as we're going up there, and he was like, yeah, my sister's coming out with an album soon. And I'm sitting there like, oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, whatever, dude.
So it was like 3,000 other people. That's awesome. And then the next year was when she just blew up. It was unbelievable.
Wow.
So, yeah. Taylor Swift. Hendersonville High School alum.
That is pretty cool.
Yeah.
I mean, gosh, you just never know. Maybe Taylor Swift could be the Tom Brady. Why can't she tamper and bring Tom Brady here?
She absolutely can.
We have a lot of options, really.
Who would you rather listen to, Taylor Swift or Dana White?
I thought you were going to say Justin Timberlake, because that's easy. Justin Timberlake.
Well, yeah.
I like Taylor Swift.
I do, too.
My daughter is a huge. My wife and daughter went to the concert at Nissan. You know, I guess it was a couple years ago now. But, like, I don't normally like pop, you know, or country. I mean, like, I don't really like that stuff.
She's a combo artist.
I tell you what, she's got some good songs.
She does. They're
catchy. I'm not going to lie.
I'm not going to lie either. You know, I sung with her one time.
Really?
Me and 299 other people.
Okay, but you can say you have sang with...
In 2009, we sang the song 15 that she has. We were there at the CMA Awards. She was singing it live, and she brought in like 300 of us from Hendersonville High School.
So you were like 16 at the time?
I was 17, yes.
17 at the time? Okay. That's a pretty cool
experience. I wasn't 15. Oh, yeah. Little did you know, I have performed at the CMA Awards.
I did. Like, I knew you went. I didn't realize that all this stuff happened.
Oh, yeah.
There's
a deep history.
Eye-opening.
Yeah. They don't just let anybody on the radio over here.
That's right.
This is what happens. Joe, your good buddy Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports joined us in the last segment talking about Tom Brady potentially coming to the Titans. And he brought up something that I find very interesting, and that is that aspect of being a quarterback, like he mentioned the story he told between Peyton Manning, Reggie Wayne, where sometimes you're just on the same page and you can make some plays off of stuff nobody else would even think of. Like he mentioned, you know, Peyton Manning recalled a play from 4 years previous that he and Reggie Wayne just immediately they threw up a hand signal and they knew what to do. I think Tom Brady, it's pretty safe to say, probably has that with Julian Edelman. He's not going to have that here. Now, at the end of the day, that's not the biggest deal on whether or not you should sign him or not if you're the Titans. But there's no question that as his age, going to be 43 when next season begins, you want every advantage you can get because Father Time eventually is going to catch up and his skill set is not going to be the same. I guess do you think what is the realistic window for Tom Brady? Because Charles was talking about you're looking at 2 years probably at best case, maybe just 1 year, and who knows? Maybe not at all. Like he could be diminished to the point and continuing on a downward trend where next year he comes in here, there's a new offense he has to learn, and it just doesn't go well. That's the risk you have to weigh if you're the Titans and you're at least considering bringing Brady in.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a good point by Charles because there's some automatic stuff that has gone on for a long time, and so now it's not as automatic. And, of course, he'd figure it out, and he'd make guys better and all that, but it's still a transition, and it's something to consider. And, like, the window, again, I'm going to go back to Alex Guerrero, Brady's trainer who – ended up, you know, training a lot of other Patriots guys. And, you know, then, of course, I don't know, Belichick wanted him to leave, all this stuff. This guy who gets a lot of credit for how Brady has extended his career and how he's, you know, done different workouts and diets and all this stuff to still play at a high level. Alex Guerrero was quoted as saying, you know, he could actually go till 45. You know, so, like, that's the ceiling Guerrero put on it. Like, if anybody's going to, you know, exaggerate, like, you know, what could be possible, you would think it would be that guy. I mean, his business is basically created by Tom Brady's excellence. And he's like, he could go till 45. No one knows for sure, but I think we've seen the diminishing already. I don't think there's any question about it. If you watch him play, it's not the same guy. It shouldn't be the same guy. Most guys at that age, long since retired.
Yep.
So, again, it's just one of a few reasons I think it's an easy choice, even though it may sound ridiculous.
Look, and there are going to be some Titans fans out there, and maybe you're already there, and I understand it. This is how sports media works, especially the constant news cycle that is ESPN and First Take and all these different shows. They're talking about Brady all the time. They're talking about Brady coming to the Titans all the time. And there are fans out there that either love that or they absolutely hate it. But Titans fans have been craving, like, the national spotlight and the national attention for a long time. Like, how many times have we taken calls either here on the radio or tweets on Twitter that we've seen that say, how come the Titans aren't getting enough love? I mean, nobody nationally ever talks about the Titans. You got a whole lot of people talking about your team right now. That part of it's got to be really good, right, for the local Titans fan around here?
And yet most people seem ticked off about
it. They
do. But, yeah, it's an old – well, look, Taylor Lewan, for example, is a guy who has talked about, you know, the national attention that the Titans don't get. And even – and has even tied that after at least one game to, like, officiating and stuff like that. Like, it's almost like, you know, the league just doesn't care about us. You know, so there's a lot, and there's a lot of that from fans, certainly. I mean, first of all, you've always have some fans are going to say, the announcers hate our team and love the other team.
Which every fan base says that, which is just most of the time bogus.
Yeah.
It's not how that works.
Yeah, you know, so you have that biased perspective, and then you perceive bias, even though I think usually it's not there. But, yeah, I guess if that's a big thing. I mean, I feel like they got tons of attention in the playoffs when they were winning, and that's really how you get attention. You're never going to have the same thing as, like, the Cowboys and some of these big market traditional teams that have huge fan bases, and every media outlet knows that it's worthwhile to talk about those teams. You're never going to have that. But you win, you get more attention. Who gets talked about more this offseason, especially of late, than the Titans?
Yeah.
I mean, there's a handful
maybe
of teams.
That's
basically
about it.
Yeah. Well, sure. Like, there's a handful of teams that are, like, Brady possible destinations, and they're all getting talked about more than anyone else by far.
Yeah, no question about it. When we come back, we're going to have Hal Gill join us. But before we go to break, I do want to pass something along. Got some good news coming out of Putnam County. Obviously, devastation that's gone through Putnam County earlier this week. I think the National Weather Service confirmed that it was EF4 tornado that went through there. So obviously that's a very violent tornado. There's been some people that have been unaccounted for. I think two nights ago that list was 77 people long. That has now gotten down to zero. So zero people are now left unaccounted for, zero missing persons. So good news that everybody who was missing has been accounted for. So wanted to pass that along. When we come back, big game tonight between the Nashville Predators and the Dallas Stars. We'll talk to Hal Gill and get his thoughts on the matchup. That's next. You're listening to Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad from The Athletic. A big one tonight for the Nashville Predators against the Dallas Stars. And to help us talk more about that, let's bring in our good friend Hal Gill, brought to you by Puckett's. Skillsy, what's going on, my man?
How you doing, guys? Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. It's our pleasure each and every week. And Skillsy, a big one tonight for the Predators against the Stars. Why has the matchup against the Stars, in your opinion, been such a difficult one for the Preds? And how do they fix that going into tonight?
Well, it's very different. It used to be a run-and-gun team. I mean, the Stars were, you know, they were gonna match you toe-to-toe and just all offense, and they changed that all around. Now they're a really good, solid defensive team. They've got a buy-in from the Stars. You know, if you can get Sagan and Ben to play quality defense, you don't worry about them scoring as much. they're still going to get you the points, and they show up when it counts. But, you know, it's a tough team to play against. You got to work for every inch you're going to get out there.
Hal, we talk a lot about, you know, the key guys, the high-paid forwards on this team needing more production. You know, I'm sure as much as we talk about it, those guys think about it, talk about it, understand the situation, want it to change. From your perspective, is this, you know, do you look at it like just some individuals have to do more on their own, like just go to a hard area, do something more, compete level, whatever it is? Or is there a collective thing here that's just not quite connecting with these guys?
It's hard to take one without the other. I think in order to be effective, the most effective you can be, you have to play as a team. I don't think there's too many guys that go out there. There's those exceptional talents. We saw Draisaitl and McDavid, and we just saw Nathan MacKinnon. Those guys can change a game on their own. I don't think the Preds are looking for that from any guy, but I'm looking for a wow here or there. You know, you saw Kevin Fiala play, and he has some confidence going right now, and he was in Minnesota. And, of course, we know how streaky he can be. But when he got the puck, it was like every time he touched it was a wow. It was a whoa. He's going out there with a purpose. And that's really what I'm looking for. And it's not going to be every shift. The league is tough. You get shut down. You know, you have bad shifts. But, you know, our top-end guys for the Preds should be giving us a wow every once in a while. If it's, you know, a period from each guy, then you're getting a little more pressure. You're getting a little more attack. You're putting the team on their heels. And that's really what I'm looking for. Other than that, it's play within the structure. Dumb it down. Keep it simple. Play the right way, and good things will happen. But in the end, players got to play, and you need guys to step up and make plays for you.
Preds radio analyst Hal Gill, brought to you by Puckett's, on the line with us. How much of that is mental at this point with some of these top guys? Forsberg, Johansson, Duchesne, Arvidsson. Like, how much of the struggles that they're having right now with their productivity is just the mental side of the game?
It's all mental. I mean, these guys are obviously skilled players. You know, there's injuries. There's a lot that goes into it. But in the end, it's the mental strategy you have going into a game. You know, I've played games where I just didn't have it. I could tell, you have a cracked rib, or you're playing through a bad knee or a bad back or whatever it is. You kind of get in a mental mindset to go out there and give whatever you can for the team, not cost the team, contribute when you can. But it's a mindset that you're like, okay, this isn't my night. I got to play it smart. And so, you know, sometimes you got a bit of a cold or whatever it is. You change the way you play. But there's got to be someone on that team that feels good and feels a drive to make a change. And so you're not going to have it every night. But if you have five guys every night that go out there and feel good and feel like they can make a play, that should be enough to get you the one or two goals that you need. You just got to make sure that you're getting it from those five guys, and the rest of the guys fall in line and try to keep the score as even as possible. So I do believe it's a mindset throughout the team, but it's certainly you have to be in the right frame for yourself.
Well, speaking of that, Hal, Monday, obviously a really rough night for Pecorini. I think, you know, by the mid third period, it was kind of hard to watch. You know, you just knew it would just be best for him to be off the ice. I think you could probably look at that game and see a lot of instances of easy opportunities for the Oilers. You saw two unbelievable players who were two of the best in this league dominating, and then probably some goals that normally you'd expect him to stop. But where do you think he is right now? What's a fair expectation for him the rest of the way?
Well, I have to preface it with, I thought he was really good the two games he played before that one. I thought he was really good. He got sick and missed out and missed kind of that rotation. But, he came in. I thought he looked good in the first period. He looked dialed in. you know, he focuses a lot on his game and his preparation. So I can kind of see it when he feels like he's feeling good. So I thought he played well. And then it's tough when you have those guys going, you know, the goal where McDavid goes all the way up and around, it looks like a goal that should be stopped, but you're watching one of the most dynamic players in the game, if not the most dynamic player, and you're trying to read which way is this guy going to go, and then all of a sudden he just throws a wrister that goes through three different screens and goes in. I think it's just demeaning. It's you know, what's going on here? How is that? How does that go in, and how did that happen? You know, and then you start to second-guess yourself and think about things, and then, of course, the power play goal by Dreisaitl was one of the most insane plays by two of the best players in the game. And so you can't fault them on that. The Dreisaitl goal off the rush, I think you're just dealing with a guy that you're, all right, where is this guy going to go and what is he going to do? And when he slides one five-hole, you go, come on, that's not where you're supposed to shoot. When you're dialed in like Dreisaitl is, you know, he makes you think that you're going to go other ways and makes you look like you should have had that one. But really, it's a mind game that those guys were playing. And so I thought that was a team performance that was dreadful in the third period. It was not even close to where it should be. Of course, Rene should make some saves, but I just have a hard time putting it on one guy. And I hate to see the way that, you know, everyone breaks down Rene's performance when I thought team-wise that was just such a lackluster, awful effort.
And Hal, speaking of that, John Hines talked about that effort after the game and had some really strong words, said the intensity wasn't there, the effort level wasn't there. And I followed up with a question that was just simply like, how is that possible when you have 17 games left in the season and they're where they're at in this playoff race? And basically John Hines' response to that was, that's a really good question. We're trying to figure that out. As a former player, could you ever kind of tell that the intensity level, especially late in the season, wasn't where it needed to be? And how did you guys go about fixing that if that was the case?
Yeah, that's certainly one of the tougher things for the average person to understand. How can you play in the NHL and not give every effort you have? These guys are working hard, and sometimes you work overly hard. You try to do too much, and I think that's where they've gotten in trouble. You know, it's all about details, and as a unit of playing as a unit of five, and I watch a lot of what St. Louis has done and how they've gotten to be so good, and they play as a unit of five, and they support each other. If you have one guy that's out of position, all of a sudden the other guy has to work that much harder to make up for his lack of position, and then the next guy has to follow up to make sure that he's covering, and it kind of snowballs, and the next thing you know, everyone is skating around, missing their mark. It looks like they're not working hard because they're all not in position, but in reality, they're working harder than they ever have. So sometimes it gets away from you and you fall apart, but I think you have to come back to not just working hard, but working hard on the details, the little plays, the stick position that changes which way a guy is going to go. And if you can change that, you can change the way the play goes. Now you look like you're smart and you're working hard because you're taking away a player on the boards that normally would have been going one way. You force them and get the stop, and then it's an easy breakout. It looks a lot better when you do it that way than when then you're a little bit off on your details, and good players make you look bad.
Preds radio analyst Hal Gill has been our guest here on Morning Drive. Hal, thanks so much for joining us this morning, and we'll see you tonight at the rink.
Thanks for having me, guys. It'll be a big game tonight. Obviously, we're on the must-win train right now, yeah. And this is a must-win for the Preds.
No question about it. Thanks, Hal.
Thanks.
Hal Gill brought to you each and every week by Puckett's, and it's a big one tonight. I like a lot of what he said there. I think the Predators have been guilty of this at times. Sometimes you're so far in a funk and you're trying to do everything you can possibly do that you just don't make the simple plays. I think that's a lot of what Philip Forsberg specifically has been going through as of late. Is, you know, he understands he hadn't scored in a while. He understands that he's a guy that this team relies on to be productive offensively. And there have been a lot of times over the last two or three weeks where he's tried to do, I think, too much instead of just making that simple play that's right there in front of him. And that can happen, especially when you're struggling. That's something that you as a player, that's a hard mental battle to kind of fight there.
Yeah, and I thought it was interesting, too, Hal talking about, you know, a wild play like Fiala. You see a little, just a jump and a confidence, and like he knows he's going to make a play. And if you get just a little bit of that from some of these guys, what does that mean? Well, how does that translate into production and pressure? Probably means something.
Yeah, when we come back, we'll wrap up the show, look ahead at tonight's game against the Dallas Stars. But first, join 102.5 The Game at the Walmart located at 7044 Charlotte Pike in Nashville this Saturday from 11 to 2 p.m. We'll be out there giving away prizes and tickets to upcoming Preds games. Plus, Nash will be on hand from 1 to 2, so always fun to see Nash out there. While you're there, be sure to grab a limited edition Nashville Predators Dr. Pepper six-pack. Dr. Pepper, so nice to treat you. That's at Walmart at 7044 Charlotte Pike in Nashville this Saturday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. We'll be back next to wrap up the show here on Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Final segment of the day here on Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode from The Athletic, Marquise Munson doing what he normally does behind the glass, and that is come prepared, spin the hits, and be beautiful. Look at him back there.
Absolutely.
Just imagine a houndstooth hat at the SEC tournament.
Mm. Oh, yeah. I'll be wearing it, too.
at least have it in your bag, man.
I'll have some other Alabama memorabilia I got to think of. Julio Jones jersey under my...
You can get Matt Jones' face.
In this show, we have gone from Marquise wanting to be very professional at this setting next week to now I think he's going to go over the top.
Well, technically, Julio Jones, I could wear an Atlanta Falcons Julio Jones.
That's true.
Yeah,
I guess that'd be okay.
See, I can do that. I can pull that off.
Listen, again, if Matt Jones can sit on press row with a big Kentucky...
Why are you picking on Matt Jones?
I'm just saying, if he can do that, if he can sit on press row in all his Kentucky gear like a big foam finger, then why can't you wear a houndstooth hat? What, you know? Well, let's see someone else who's a homer for whatever team come in and you know, try to give Matt Jones a business.
Have you ever experienced that? Like, I mean, obviously both of you have experienced that, like going into like a road environment and then the press box just kind of going crazy over
Yeah. I'll tell you the biggest homer press boxes. I haven't been to all of them, but Notre Dame and Michigan, you've got, and some of it is you got huge staffs of like the recruiting sites for these because they're huge fan bases. So you got like more people who do that. There is some serious like whimpering when they lose and, you know, little under the table hand slaps when they score a touchdown stuff, man. Those two.
I think that's every college program though, because Alabama has that. I went to Neyland Stadium in Tennessee against Alabama, and there was a lot of cheering where they had to say in the overhead, "Hey, can we keep the noise down with the cheering?"
What happens is like boosters and stuff in the press box.
See, that might have been that too. But also is like local radio guys there too.
Oh yeah,
us people.
Yeah,
you people.
We people
would be in there. And then sometimes those local radio guys who have a bias towards the team that they cover, obviously, they kind of go a little crazy. I had that little issues plenty of times at SEC bat football games. So yeah.
See, I haven't, like, I've been covered a couple games at Alabama, I've covered a bunch of games at Neyland, and I would have thought that. Like, I would have expected that. And honestly, I didn't think it was that bad. It was not nearly the fan feeling in the press box that I thought I might encounter.
You see it in the NHL. Go to Notre Dame and Michigan.
Yeah, in the NHL a little bit.
Every now and then. I was in St. Louis one time and they scored a goal. And I think somebody almost broke their hand in their celebration on the press box. I was like, come on, man. What are you doing up here?
Oh, man. Yeah. I mean, you're never going to totally get away from it. You know, I've got plenty of stories of like an individual reporter here or there, you know, pumping the fist or, you know, saying something under the breath. But Notre Dame and Michigan, I'm telling you guys, it's something else.
Yeah. I do want to pass something along real quick. Bill Lee, our governor, has come out and announced that the first case confirmed of coronavirus in Tennessee has taken place. The patient is being quarantined in Williamson County, according to the Tennessean. So if you're driving down the road and had not heard that yet, just something to make you aware of. Obviously, coronavirus has been a heavy topic of conversation in the news for the last few weeks and months. And the first case in Tennessee, according to Governor Bill Lee, has been confirmed. So just something to pass along there. Be vigilant.
Do with that what you will. Yeah. But, yeah, do the things like washing your hands and, you know, I mean, there's some reactions to this coronavirus that, to me, are pretty extreme. Obviously, it is deadly. It has, I think, mostly been deadly for very old, very young, or people with immune system issues. But yeah, still, it's a serious thing. I think there's been some overreaction to it. I'm not surprised we have something here. I think it was inevitable.
Yeah.
Just do your due diligence on this. And, you know, we'll see if this ends up really impacting things moving forward, if it keeps spreading. I don't know. It's not no big deal. It's not maybe the total panic thing that some have made it out to be.
Yeah, I would agree wholeheartedly with that. All right, as we wrap up the show here, we're looking ahead to tonight's game between the Preds and the Stars, a big one for the Preds. They're on a three-game skid right now, all in regulation. 72 points on the season. Arizona wins last night. Winnipeg holds the last wild card spot, 74 points. Vancouver also in the first wild card spot with 74 points. Arizona with 74 as well. Minnesota with their win against the Preds the other night, 73. So Nashville right behind those teams at 72. This is a matchup they've struggled with this season and dating back to last season against the Dallas Stars. An important one tonight for the Predators. They have to find a way to generate some offense against a team that has just been downright stingy defensively. This is on the Predators tonight to figure out a way to get to those hard areas, whether it's forcing turnovers in the neutral zone and having odd man rushes going back the other way, whether it's just putting your head down and getting to the middle of the ice. They got to find a way to be more productive against the Stars offensively.
You had a texter earlier as we were talking, one of our segments, talking about, you know, the high-paid forwards, which has become sort of the dominant. The high-paid forwards not producing has become this year's power play of last year,
yeah,
kind of. But good point made that, you know, how often are those guys scoring on the power play? I mean, that's where high-paid forwards get a lot of their points. That's where Stars in this league, when you have a man advantage, you have an advantage in terms of your ability to score. And so that's also, it's just not there. And that's where they've got to be better. So that's this year's power play. But the power play is also still this year's
still
power play
good.
Too.
Yeah.
It's got to be better.
It's not as bad as it was last year. Like last year in the playoffs, I want to say they went 0 for 13.
It was 0 for whatever.
Maybe 0 for 15, somewhere around
0 for a lot.
Yeah, 0 for too many. And, you know, we talked about how the Predators were never really in control of that series last year against Dallas. You score 1, 2, 3 power play goals, who knows? I mean, that could be a different series
at
that point.
Well, you take it to 7 if you do. We know that because they had some opportunities in that game. So that is, I mean, that you take that up a little bit, and some of those guys maybe get an easy look, get one to go. Maybe you get the ball rolling the other way.
Yeah. Stars aren't playing great right now either. They've lost 3 games in a row. Now, 2 of those have been in either a shootout or in overtime. But I would imagine you're going to see the Stars come out tonight with a pretty good intensity level. They've been fairly consistent in that all season long. Last time the Predators were at home, John Hines was not very happy at all with the intensity level they have. To me, that's the last thing that can happen tonight. Like, you can lose, and obviously that's not good, and you don't want that to happen. But if you come out and you play with some intensity to you and you just lose because the Stars are better than you are, I mean, I guess you can live with that. But if we're having the same conversation tomorrow about the intensity level and the effort level not being there like we had on Tuesday after the game on Monday night, I just don't know where you go from there at that point.
No, it would be totally inexcusable. And, you know, the last time the Preds took on a team that had a guy who had hurt one of their guys with a dirty play, which is Robert Bortuzzo.
Yeah.
They went after him. They went after the Blues. They had an unbelievable first period and established themselves in that game. And then they ended up having a clutch third period and winning. And, of course, they beat him the next night. So I think Corey Perry is a guy of interest tonight.
Absolutely. That's going to do it for us today here on Morning Drive. We'll be back tomorrow morning to recap the game that was between the Predators and the Dallas Stars. Darren Donick and Chase is coming up next. They're live from Bridgestone Arena. We'll see you tomorrow on Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.
Plus, terms and conditions apply.
Now at McDonald's, a McDouble is only $2.50. So you can get your gym gains on or just get lunch for only $2.50. Get more value on the under $3 menu.
Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher for delivery.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks. Like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.